This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. President-elect Donald Trump says his transition is running smoothly. Observers are calling it chaotic. And uncertainty continues at the state level as well. Gubernatorial race remains in question as incumbent Governor Pat McCrory challenges the vote count that shows Cooper is the winner. Joining me now is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Let's start at the national level. We've got some picks now at the cabinet level for President-elect Trump. Attorney General Senator Jeff Sessions, what do we know about him?
Well, yeah, it looks like it's going to be Jeff Sessions, and it's not a surprise. He was the first senator to back Donald Trump, one of the very few who did early. He is a senator from Alabama, first elected in 1996. But 10 years before that, when President Reagan nominated him to be a federal judge, he was defeated. His nomination was defeated in the Republican-led Senate because of statements he's made, in the past that sounded very racially oriented. He was accused of calling one person a boy. He had some kind of jokes about the Ku Klux Klan. He had certain votes on race initiatives. So the things that defeated him in 1986 perhaps got him elected to the Senate 10 years later.
Two racists for the Republicans in 86, now the nominee for, nominee for Attorney General under the Trump administration. Let's talk about General Mike Flynn, National Security Advisor. What do we know about him?
Well, this is interesting because he had been, and first of all, he's a Democrat. He had been the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. He had been very instrumental in getting and helping run the war in Afghanistan. But what happened was he was fired by President Obama in 2014 because of leadership questions. And since then, he's really going off on the deep end is a little extreme. I don't mean to say it that way, but he has said some things. He's talked about how Islam is a political ideology. He's really talked about the war on Islam. He's pals. He went to Russia to give a speech, and he was seen smiling with Putin. The thing was interesting about General Michael Flynn, and it looks like he'll be the national security advisor, is that given the fact that President-elect Trump has very little or actually no foreign policy experience, Flynn could have a very oversized role and influence in determining U.S. policy.
And like Trump, active on Twitter, he has tweeted dubious statements like Sharia is spreading in the United States. That's actually
right.
Not a fact. And apparently when he was head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, his subordinates came up with a name for a phenomenon where his relationship with the truth was sometimes estranged. They would call these Flynn facts, things he would make up at the Defense Intelligence Agency. So he had a reputation for that even before he got fired, I guess.
Exactly. And ever since he left the administration, the Obama administration, his rhetoric and actions have been seen much more extreme than they had been.
All right.
He's
well,
a registered Democrat, which is interesting.
And a registered Democrat, fired by a Democrat. And again, for these leadership questions surrounding his relationship with the truth. So now still lingering concerns about White House strategist Steve Bannon. Tell us again who Steve is.
Steve Bannon, until he headed up the Trump presidential campaign in August, he had been the head of Breitbart, which had always been a fringe group of a very alt-right, very, very conservative philosophy where, you know, I mean, there have been accusations that they would print many racist, anti-Semitic stuff on its website, and of course that racist anti-Semitic label went to Steve Bannon, although his defenders say that's absolutely not true. And obviously with President-elect Trump having a son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is an Orthodox Jew, how could he be accused of being anti-Semitic? But Jewish groups, mostly moderate Jewish groups, are furious with the Bannon thing. It's very, very controversial. And of course, to be a senior counselor and top advisor to the president is no Senate confirmation. So Bannon is in. I mean, it's funny, all these Democrats and these liberal groups are saying, well, we got, you know, and Harry Reid says, we must fire Bannon. Well, you know, I mean, obviously that's not going to happen, especially if it's the Democrats Democrats who are complaining.
Well, anti-Semitic, but there's no doubt about the Breitbart being white supremacist. They openly embrace white supremacy as the theory. Bannon was the head of that group. That's something they can't walk away from, can they?
He'll tell you it's more of nationalism, but most people look at it as white nationalism. And if you all you have to do is just look at the stuff they've printed, and a lot of them, and of course a lot of the tweets that Breitbart has retweeted ultimately came from, many of them came from anti-Semitic and white nationalist groups when they were retweeted. So, you know, the stench is there and the links are there, but you know, Donald Trump is the president-elect, and we knew about Bannon running the campaign as far back as August, and the American people had a choice to make, and they made their choice.
All right. Well, still a lot of positions open at the top of the Trump administration. Any women in the candidate pool?
Well, I mean, Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, her name has been mentioned. Of course, she was clearly anti-Trump during the primaries and not a Trump supporter in the general election. I don't know if her name is out there for show or not. Her name has been mentioned even as far as Secretary of State, although she has no foreign policy experience either. Sarah Palin has been, that name has been hinted as far as Secretary of the Interior. And, of course, she can see the Secretary of Interior from her kitchen window, so that might be.
She can also see their pal Putin, who's actually her next-door neighbor, I guess.
And just across the
all friends.
Right, exactly. And there's no place like Nome.
So that's it. Okay, now what about people of color? They're going to have to do something about that, won't they? Or maybe not.
Well, I mean, John Boehner's name has been mentioned. And he's, that's an orange joke. But you know, I mean, Ben Carson made some headlines the other day saying that, well, you know, I'm not going to accept anything if anything's offered. We don't know if anything was offered. Ben Carson was very close with Trump after he dropped out of the presidential race. And Trump has said good things about Carson, but I have not seen any other person of color's name being mentioned as for any kind of administrative post.
Let's take a look at the Democrats now. There's some challenges to Nancy Pelosi. Tell us about that challenge.
Well, you know, she's been the minority leader for quite some time. Of course, she lost her majority. She lost her speakership in 2010 when the Republican Party picked up 63 seats in the House. And, you know, if you buy the argument that where the Democratic Party is the weakest, and we saw that last Tuesday, the weakest in the industrial Midwest, the Ohios, the Pennsylvanias, the Michigans, well, do you want Nancy Pelosi, who comes from the elite district of San Francisco, running the party? I mean, she's very popular in the Democratic caucus. She raises a lot of money. She usually keeps her party united, but she is... I mean, it's worth mentioning she's 76 years old. She's been in Congress nearly 30 years. And Tim Ryan, a blue-collar Democrat from Ohio, from Youngstown, Ohio, has announced yesterday that he's going to mount the challenge. I should tell you that no Democratic leader in House history has ever been defeated in an intra-party election. But, you know, there's a lot of anger out there, and whether Tim Ryan beats her or not, we'll see how much dissension there is. The election is November 30th.
And these are extraordinary times indeed.
They are.
The Democratic National Party, obviously, looking for new leadership. Who's leading in that field?
I think the front runner is probably Keith Ellison. He's the one of two Muslim members of Congress from Minnesota. He has been endorsed by Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, Harry Reid, the outgoing Senate Minority Leader, has also backed him too. He's, you know, probably one of the most left-wing members of the House, one of the leading progressives. Maybe the Trump people would love to point to the Democratic Party as a party led by a black Muslim. But anyway, whatever it is, Keith Ellison is a very articulate guy, very, very strong on progressive issues. He would have a clear contrast to what's coming out of the Trump administration. He's being challenged, or at least other candidates in the race include Howard Dean, who was chairman from 2005 to 2009, and that encompassed two big Democratic victories in 2006 and 2008. So Howard Dean wants it again. There's a South Carolina Democratic chair, maybe Labor Secretary Tom Perez, but Keith Ellison is likely to be the favorite. I know a lot of conservative groups are talking about the fact that years ago he defended Louis Farrakhan and all that stuff, and I think maybe they're trying to do that to distract from all the attention being pointed at Steve Bannon for his racial views, but I would suspect Keith Ellison is the front runner of the election. It's probably going to happen in February, if not March.
All right. Well, here in North Carolina, you know, we're talking about at the national level, new cabinet members, et cetera. We can't do that here in North Carolina because we don't know who our governor is.
I mean, I thought it would be more a bigger margin than it was. I thought HB2 was going to royal politics forever in North Carolina, and the fact is, not only was Richard Burr elected and re-elected and Donald Trump took the state, but the governor's race was closer than I thought. Still, Roy Cooper has a 5,000-vote lead. McCrory has not given up. I think today was supposed to be the deadline for the recount, or at least the counting of all the outstanding ballots.
Right, provisional ballots.
That may not be the case, but McCrory is not conceding, and there are other much closer elections around the country, such as New Hampshire Senate, where Kelly Ayotte, who was trailing by a smaller margin, did concede, but McCrory is not ready to give up yet.
Not at all. In fact, he's contesting ballots in 52 counties. Provisional ballot is provisional counts have had to be extended. As more votes come in and absentee votes, Roy Cooper's lead is now growing. Is this rare? At least in this election, are there other races like this, at least at the governor's level, that are still in doubt?
No, none. I mean, of course, there weren't that many good gubernatorial races. We kind of know who the governors are, except for North Carolina. But it's very rare to have, I mean, if we're talking about a couple of hundred votes, that's one thing. We're talking about, as you point out, Frank, 5,000 votes and increasing.
Right.
And, you know, there was like the Al Franken Senate race in Minnesota in 2008 that wasn't decided for 7 or 8 months later. But for the most part, this is the only one that people are looking at. And again, I mean, having thought that it was going to be a bigger margin for Cooper, I think the only surprise is not McCrory not conceding, but the fact that McCrory's, you know, made it as close as he did, given all the business and other groups' dissatisfaction with what happened, with what's going on in North Carolina.
Always a pleasure, Ken. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Political junkie Ken Rudin. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, you may know Dorothea Lange, for her photographic portrayals of the Depression. We'll talk with her granddaughter and her documentary filmmaking next on The State of Things.